Presented live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za. The Hive with Bonolo Beasting.
Tonight on The Hive, it is all about fashion, looking good, and clothing. On Kaya959, on the street, on the air, and in studio, I have the absolutely wonderful Tepo Sharon Mafukwane from Sober Design House. Hi Tepo, how are you?
Fine, and you, Bonolo?
Oh, and thank you so much for coming through to chat to us right here on The Hive.
Thanks for having me.
Nice one. Now, one thing that I do see about your clothing is that you design for women, but what is your main aesthetic?
Our aesthetic, you know, it's a very feminine, very flattering. It's for typically your South African woman, you know. I think as an African woman, I know what our bodies like to look like, and it helps that I'm actually a woman, because I know what other girls want to look like. So our aesthetic is very ultra feminine. It's classic. You know, we kind of stay away from trends. I think being a true brand, you are the trend. But our trendiness is a classic one. You know, it's not the clothes that you buy now and then you can't wear them 2 years or 10 years later. We are for your classic, very urban.
Yes,
very modern kind of clothes. You know, we do have traditional silhouettes, but our fabrics and details and things like that, very modern.
I mean, I also like the fact that you love your prints. You love your prints.
It's new for me, you know. I don't want to lie to you. I was scared before.
Yeah,
I was scared of prints because first of all, to source a good print, it's very difficult because when you do finally source it, you have to compete with seeing it everywhere else. So yes, I'm starting to really, really enjoy prints. And of course, with one of our classic styles is to blend it up. You know, it can't be all. I know I'm wearing all print today.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't often do like all print. We have your details that we add in to blend it in so that we, you know, our style can be unique.
Yeah. You know, off air we were giggling and I officially called you the globe trotting devil. You recently went to the 2022 Forbes Summit AFI Fashion.
I went with AFI courtesy of them. It was a summit held by Forbes. We were invited by the Forbes Foundation. It was a 30 to 50 ladies summit, and this was an incredible event where it was women from all around the world, anybody between the ages of 30 and 50, and are successful by their own right within whatever field they are doing. So we were sitting there with people that had owned digital banks. We were sitting with really dynamic, phenomenal people. Anybody who is a leader in their field or in their industry was there. We had Tyra Banks. She's a bit over 50, but still, you know, that was nice to hear from her. And these were women that were sharing their stories about their journey and motivation. And also, it was a whole hoo-ha, a whole celebration. It was wonderful. I had so much fun.
South Africa and the textile industry. Now, there's nowhere where we're not going to be able to talk about how the textile industry in South Africa is... I don't even know if there's a word to describe it. I mean, specifically talking about the fact that there's a lot of fake clothing on the streets.
Yes, that we know. I mean, I've even seen knockoffs of Sober Design.
What?
I have. It was quite shocking. And, you know, I didn't know how to feel about it. But people will tell me, just take it as a compliment. It means you're doing something right. But I just felt like, oh my God, this is my money. This is food out of my mouth. Mm. And I don't even think that I'm your Louis Vuitton, Christian Dior. We don't have 5,000 stores around the world. So it happened very early in my career. I'm glad it did, because I learned how to watch out for such things. So yes, our industry is highly exploitative. I mean, you walk into any China mall, you'll find a knockoff of a South African designer. When they come here, they look for us to copy from, because they have to eat from our plates.
Should we not have a time where the powers that be, government specifically, being able to actually assist South African designers in protecting their designs?
You know, that has been in talks, but it's, you know, you get quite powerless, because let's be honest, knockoffs are everywhere around the world. Every country has. And if they're there in in the likes of Europe and the USA, you can just imagine how powerless we feel here in Africa, especially because our fashion industry is so young. You know, we don't have age-old labels that have been around like Balenciaga, and, you know, we don't have those kind of established brands that have been around centuries that are strong enough and successful enough to not even feel it. They don't feel it. They don't care if there's a knockoff here, Louis Vuitton in Blue Street or in Chinatown. They don't care. It doesn't affect them, you know. And I think we just have to rise above to that level where our style is authentic, and we also have to be wary of such things and market ourselves correctly. Because one thing I can tell you, a sober customer, a genuine sober customer, somebody who wears our brand, they see the knockoffs and they laugh. They're like, it's nothing like yours. It doesn't even feel like it, you know, because they know the luxury. They know how the clothes feel and fit, and they understand the true value of the brand, and they appreciate that. So they are not the type who are going to say, ah, I'm not going to buy from you anymore. I saw your dress in Chinatown and whatever. So we just have to get real support from our communities, because I think that's where it becomes super, super sad when I can't imagine myself losing a genuine sober customer who's been buying for me for 10 years, all of a sudden deciding not to because there's a knockoff somewhere else. So yeah, it's about having that strong sense of, you know, even confidence in ourselves.
Yeah.
And we share that confidence with our customers so that they believe in the brand and they know, you know, that they are supporting a person, like somebody who is a local. You could be buying a knockoff of somebody who is literally your cousin. You know, I've had friends of mine saying, you know, I almost bought this dress. I thought it was yours until I checked the label. But because I knew it wasn't sober, I did not buy it. So something we're just going to have to deal with for a long time. I mean, they've been going on for years. Yeah.
So your clients want quality, darling.
They love the quality. They love the way the clothes make them feel. I describe sober as a mood, as a freedom of some sort, you know. Like, I think women who wear our brand, they even walk different. I have a client who likes saying, you know, I think your clothes, they're very close to cosmetic surgery. You know, it's like you're a plastic surgeon. You know, because we, you know, they know how the clothes
fit properly
and make them feel, and the way they flatter the most important parts. I mean, I know as a woman, I mean, doing this brand, I was still skinny. I was a size 30, something like that. And obviously I've grown through the years. I know which parts to hide now in these clothes, the things that make women uncomfortable. I mean, I started growing bulges in places. I'm like, what is this? And then I look at some of the stuff when I design now. I'm quite careful. I'm conscious of that there's no girl who's going to want to show that. Let's find a way to make this pattern. Let's find a fabric that's going to just glide off of her curves and show them off the correct way.
What I love the most also about fashion is the music. How what's the process when you choose the music for the catwalk?
That's actually my favorite part.
Ah.
Can I tell you that I cannot design a collection without, you know, my headsets in and blasting music. I do love music a lot. I come from a family that loves music. So I grew up around uncles that were so eclectic. I listened to any kind of music from country to rock to rap, you know. So music for me sets the tone of the collection. It inspires me. Even when the clothes walk down the catwalk, I'm trying to share this mood with my customers. So it's the best communication medium I can use other than clothes to sell the mood. It hypes me up and it just gets me excited. I love sharing my sentiments because I can't meet each and every single customer of mine. It's impossible. Well, unless, you know, I have them all in one arena and, you know, so I use ways to let my customer know exactly who I am, share a bit of my background, share even social ills, you know, frustrations, things I'm going through. You know, music is a healer too. So that combined with clothes, I think it's a wonderful connection that I can have with a client. And luckily, with all our showcasings, that's really something that is part of what we have to deliver as designers.
Yeah.
Because I've worked with SA Fashion Week and showcased with them a lot. Part of the package is that you have to bring your own music. Fine, they'll take care of the lighting. You choose your models and everything. So that's all I have control. I'll take all the control I can get. I'll have a playlist, It's my clothes, it's my music, it's my shoes, it's my models. So it feels good. I mean, I can't work without music.
Yeah.
Even. Yeah.
Back to the business of the fashion industry. Do you think that we have enough local designers in retail stores in South Africa?
No. No, and I don't know even if there'll ever be a time where we have enough. I mean, I've done your likes of, I've been in retail stores before, and obviously it can only be a select few. I think, Bonolo, the question should be, do we have enough designers that are equipped with everything and to pull off that kind of production or a brand that is very high in quality and they can, reproduce them at a good standard. We don't have enough of those. Everybody's a designer lately, hey, I think. There's like this whole vibe now. Everybody's a designer, I want to also choose a new career. I think the industry in itself needs to be able to groom young and upcoming designers to be qualified enough and have their expertise in line and show them the resources, make them effective enough to approach a retail store and say, look at my product, look how amazing it is. And that's something that I'm very passionate about because I do mentoring. I've done internships. I sat on the board of advisory for the Faculty of Fashion for TUT. And that's one of the things that I found very, very important because, even having a qualification in fashion and you graduate, it doesn't mean you're ready to go retail. No, there's a lot to learn, which is why I'm invested in bringing in young designers and letting them shadow me or sit around and come, let me show you how this actually happens because people get glued onto the glamour, they see, that end product. It's not pretty in the back. There's guys sitting on machines and, hey, and you have to make sense of that. And you guys get so impressed and you clap for 5 minutes at a fashion show and you think that's it. So
there's a lot involved in it.
I mean, even to run the business of fashion.
You need the business acumen.
You need the acumen. I mean, we are literally employers, obviously. And that's one thing I learned very late in my career. I think I learned only 4 years in. Like, somebody was saying, you are the employer. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just a designer. I'm just having fun. Guys, come on, let's make clothes. And they're like, no, you're our boss. So you have to take such things into aspects. Labor laws are there. Having the engineering expertise. Because I think if you're going to go retail, definitely it's... You can't be sitting on a sewing machine thinking, oh, I'm going to put this into Truett's and it's going to be so amazing. Yeah. Me and my friends are going to make clothes. It doesn't work that way. I don't get to touch anything. I just have to direct an entire team and say, you do this, you do that, train. I train a lot also because it's important when you have a skills-based career line. When you're employing somebody who has a skill, you still have to embed them. You have to teach them. It's one thing because now I know a lot of people, there's this whole thing of just having to outsource, That's probably why we have all these designers.
Yeah.
Because they can take it somewhere and get it made. But then what happens when it's not made right? How do you even tell what the problem is? How do you correct a problem? Because you're going to get duped. People take your money and make you rubbish, and then you pay this person, but you're not able to tell, because I don't compare my knowledge of clothes to any, ordinary girl in the street.
Yeah.
I know a customer is, perceptive enough to see that this is low quality. So how do you achieve that? Who do you put in place to control that? You have to put control measures. There's whole loads of planning. I'm still fortunate that I'm still doing my own production. Everything that I do is in-house. So I get to touch and feel and see. And, you know, if I don't like that dress, like, what's wrong with that? No, turn it inside out, fix it. If you can't direct that and give people those expertise and say, no, this is not how you do it, this is how you're going to do it. And I was making a joke with one of my machinists yesterday. I said, do this, do this, do that. You know, because obviously I'm like a soccer coach now. You don't see soccer coaches kicking balls, right?
Yeah.
So I'm telling him what to do. But I think because he's the doer, he's thinking, what is this girl telling me? And finally when he understood, he's like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, listen here, I'm sewing with my mouth. I'm sewing with my mind. Just because I'm not sitting there, it doesn't mean I don't know what you're doing. I can tell you, your machine, this is wrong. No, fix the tension. Fix this. Fix that. No, stop. Let's call a mechanic. This machine is skipping. You see? So that's why probably in retail, I can say there's not a lot of designers who can actually qualify to be there. You know, but then I'm more on the backdrop. Like, I'm more like, let's empower them. Let's give them the skill. I don't like being in a space where I'm the only one.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a good thing. I want to see my sisters there. I want to see little girls that I've groomed, and they call me up and they say, oh, I was Tepa, thank you for that advice. And, you know, I did it and I went to whoever and I got this. You know, we have to just keep sharing that. And I think that's where our industry struggles a lot. Not many people are willing to share knowledge or leads or experiences. We're all about that looking glam, looking like, oh, you know, I'm so rich. But it's not supposed to be like that. We can share stories, we can share expertise, we can share resources as designers, and it's going to take a long time, but eventually we'll
get there.
We'll get there, you know.
Now, lastly, talking about empowerment, your message for the young little girl or young boy who's, you know, wherever in South Africa or in Africa and is tuned into Kaya 959 and is like, you know what, if Tepo can do it, I can.
I would say to them, yes, you can. You can try. But advice, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
What kind of advice? Like I said, I think education is very important. You know, I mean, I've sat with people that are doctors of fashion.
What?
Yeah. They sit with me at the advisory board, you know, for TT, and they are studied. And I think that's why we're having the scourge of designers just popping up from anywhere who don't feel like, I need to study. I don't need to study. She'll make it for me. Or I'll just find out from Tepa where she gets her stuff done. And then it always ends up, whoa, okay, so you do your own stuff. Okay, can you make my stuff? You know, but don't take shortcuts. That's the advice I can tell you. Don't take shortcuts. Take every part of it in, from the knowledge, the skills, the textbooks, whatever you can grab. And also, don't be confined. Fashion is not just all about making clothes. There's a lot of avenues in fashion. If you love the industry, immerse yourself in it, sink in it, and you'll find your place. You'll find that there's something else that's completely related to fashion that you can do. And that's one of the points I'm trying to drive now, even through universities, that, you know, fashion shouldn't just be a big fat course and then you get out and you must find your way. Can we break it down? Can they be trend analysts? Can they be stylists? Can they be just people who focused on fashion photography, fashion media? You know, fashion is broad. It's got more jobs than anything. So all I can say is, don't confine yourself. Just submerge yourself in the field. Don't be afraid to speak to industry giants or whatever. If you can have a moment with somebody like me, you know, be interested in the skills part of it, not just the glamour. Because I think that's where a lot of people are going wrong. They watch fashion TV or whatever channel they're watching, and they're just interested in that aspect. And I'm saying, go deep. Go deep. Get knowledge if you can. I mean, even something like an apprenticeship, be around a designer or try and be get more knowledge about it. It's not just the clothing on the hanger. There's a whole lot more involved. So don't take it lightly. It is a very, very tough industry, but it's a one I love, and I'm sure they can all make it.
Lovely stuff, man. Thank you so much, Sebo, for coming through and chatting to us, and all the best, and continue representing women and South Africans in the fashion industry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Manolo.
Thank you. And there you have it. Wonderful interview with, as I call her, the globetrotting, Sebo Mafokwane from Sober Design House.
The Hive with Bonolo Beasting. If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.